Roxy Soxy.
Good morning, Tam Tam. How are you?
I have a new mic for you. I have broken, I've popped my cherry on my new mic.
I love it. You're like, it's like, you're so excited about it too. It's like better than any like jewelry or anything you get. You're like, it's got four settings. It's got sound.
Yeah,
for
I know. I think I'm really turned on by technology and like just how advanced technology has got. Like you can buy cameras and you can buy lights and mics. That's like, you can become your own personalized in-house studio. And it turns me on. Like there's something about it. I don't know. Maybe it's just like the filmmaker in me. Like I love it so much more than jewelry. Like jewelry, like who's gonna look at jewelry, but at the sound of a mic people are gonna notice.
I better not see you in the emergency room one late night with that microphone in a hole it's not supposed to be in.
I was like, where is this going, Roxy? Because it has to go down the gutter. We have to get there
right in the first
like
2 minutes.
Perfect shape, don't worry. There's no sexual activity being at my parents' house, so nothing is happening right now.
Good. That mic isn't getting you too hot.
No, it's not. But my question to you is, have you ever had sex at your parents' house?
Oh, well, there was a time in high school. So in high school, so we wasn't like full sex, but it was like my high school boyfriend and myself, we both cut school and came to my house while my parents were out, like for the day. Like, I guess my dad was at work and my mom was running errands. And we were like in the living room, and in the living room, there are these windows like in the back of the room that are like big windows. We just weren't paying attention. And we were like on the couch, like doing our thing. All of a sudden we looked, peered over and we see a head. And it was like,
no,
the guy that was mowing the lawn outside. There he was like walking right by.
And he saw it all. I always say to my husband, I'm like, if anyone sees me naked outside the window, you're welcome. Like, you're welcome. I mean, I don't think I've got the greatest body, but I'm like, look, if someone sees a little nipple on a Saturday or a Tuesday, I'm like, that's a good day. You know? If he sees, my husband's so, I don't know how yours is, like, and they grew up probably, my husband grew up very differently from me. I grew up in kind of a naked house. Like, not, my dad wasn't like naked, but like if I walked in, he wasn't like, oh my goodness, don't look. He was just like, oh, I'm naked, I'll put on my shorts. You know what I mean? My mom was like, you know, I had baths with her, like super, like very open. So I feel, even though sometimes I don't like my body, I just feel very open with my kids. Like I'm, you know, being naked, it's not an issue for me at all. But Sean is very closed off, like does like shuts the door, locks the door. What's it like at your house?
So growing up or like now?
Now. And growing up.
Now, so I definitely came from like maybe a more closed like household like that. Yeah, more like private. Like everybody sort of was like, you know, changed in their own room and like that was very close. But it's interesting now how we're bringing up our daughter is we're not so shut off. Like if she walks in and somebody's changing, we don't like freak out or anything like that. And we still, she and I still like we'll have a bath.
Yeah,
like if she,
no, I don't want that to end.
I know, I don't. To end either. I'm like, please let that stay. And like, but I think for my husband, it was a harder transition to get to that point. Cause like Sean, he grew up in a very closed house, like super closed. Like he was, I remember the like first time, like he was in the shower and our daughter ran in, like he kind of like froze up and like turned around. I mean, he's still like shy about it, but he's like getting better. We're trying to make it not so weird for her to like look at her body. And
you have a normal kid. Like my kids walk into my husband, they're like, look at this, it doesn't look the same, like, you know. And so my husband's like, oh my goodness, like it's a lot.
We do put our husbands through a bit of like, you know, we're good trainers for them, you know.
Well, let's talk to, I'm so excited about our next guest because we've actually had her on before and everyone loved her so much. And her podcast, our podcast with her was trending for so long, for like 50 weeks or something. And everyone just wanted to like get her back on the show because she's so open. And it's funny, like I really connected with her on Pretty Little Liars, I think more than a lot of the other people, because as again, like when you're sort of a character that isn't the lead and you come in and out, sometimes you feel like you're not part of the pack at times, not all the time, but at times. Right. and those ancillary characters that came in and out, like I really got on well with her. And, you know, so I'm happy to have her back. So who do we have?
Roxy. Can I tell you?
Roxy.
Oh, we have. She wants to come on. I just put a comment for her. She's like, I'll do my own intro.
Hi, Roxy. Hi, Tammy. I'm so happy to be back.
Yay, we're so excited. We have like the one and only Lindsay Shaw. Our friend of the podcast. We love having you back, Lindsay.
Big friend of the podcast. Thank you. And yes. Tammy, can I tell you one of my most burnt in memories of my memory of you from Pretty Little Liars? It was, let me switch to gallery.
I'm so nervous.
No, it was beautiful. So it was I think it was the first time that you brought your baby girl to set.
Oh yeah.
And Sean came with you and you were like this giddy, like Phoenix, I mean, you were this giddy sort of just like new mom, and like Sean was there. And I just remember thinking like, what a beautiful family unit. Like the baby is so beautiful. She's got so much energy. It's almost like I got to see a part of you that like was even more playful and giddy.
Yeah, you know, which is funny because like that was probably the hard, like it's funny what you, and I'm sure you feel this way too, what you give off, like the vibes that you give off, because honestly, like just after, for the first 6 months to a year, I actually went on medication because I'd never suffered from, I've always had anxiety and like OCD tendencies and things like that. So I've always been very hyper, but I've never suffered depression and I never suffered feeling low or outside of my body and like not wanting to get up and not having motivation. I've never really suffered from that until I gave birth. And a lot of that had to do with hormonally and what the fuck is happening with my life. Like I felt like a train wreck. Like I feel like we've all done ourselves, and maybe not as much now, but a disservice to women by like telling women and new moms like how beautiful this is and how like, oh my goodness, you're going to feel so great. And you have this child. I was like, I felt like I had lost all of myself. And probably when you saw me, I was like over projecting and overcorrecting. And I was probably like, let's show everyone that I'm so happy and I have this beautiful child. And like, I was really low. Like I remember just being there going, oh my God, like who am I? I felt very uncomfortable in my body as well. And being an actress, you know, like you're like this, I was a little whippersnapper and, you know, I ate well when I exercised. I didn't really have an eating disorder at all. I'm Pretty Little Liars. I had one before that. But like now I was like, oh my goodness, I'm not fitting into these clothes. And like my stomach is like hanging over my pants and I'm wearing a girdle, like, you know, so it was like, it's interesting the perception that we give off when we're struggling the most sometimes.
Yeah. You know, like what are those birthing classes like? Because shouldn't there be kind of like a mom sort of like doula type figure who steps in and can like go over the more gnarly parts of it? Like that seems like it would be a great service.
I mean, I think they do the birthing class. Like I had a doula, paid her thousands of dollars and ended up having a C-section, you know. I was gonna have this beautiful kumbaya birth in the water. I was like,
remember that essay about your birth story.
Yeah, it was gonna be so beautiful. And I was like, I was so fucking drugged up and I was like, oh my God. But they don't talk a lot about, especially in America, they do in us like Australia, they have so many programs that are free for women here and moms, and you go on leave and they pay you and all these things. So you have a lot more support in Australia, but they don't talk about the mental health aspects of it. And I think it's three things coupled together. One is hormonally, you just lose all that estrogen, progesterone, like it just drops really fast. Number two is sleep deprivation. You are waking up, think about it, every 45 minutes for the, like Roxy, right? For the first year, it's like you're so tired, you can't see straight, like you shouldn't be driving to be honest. So when they say like they leave the baby in the backseat, I'm like, I can totally understand that. Didn't happen to me, but you are not on this planet. Like you are, I mean, that's torture. Like, you know, like you can't function properly. And number three, I think is just this narrative about it being the best time of your life. And when you feel like it's not, then you kind of go into like some kind of depression, guilt, sort of spiral. And I think it's the three coupled that I think really affects women, but no one talks about that. I mean, not women, mothers, but no one really talks about that.
So I've suffered with a lot of those things that you say, motivation, depression, and that like a lot. And so my thoughts of just getting your first dose of that while you have to wake up every 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. That is scary.
It's torture. Yeah, it's torture. Wow. I mean, it really is, because that's what like sleep deprivation is. Like when they actually torture people.
Torture you.
I mean, that's what it is. And like Cameron was saying, like you're meant to like drive around. Like I remember going to my first, like, I think it was maybe like the 6 week checkup, like after I had her, and you know, you bring the baby with you. And yeah. I was like so tired driving. And I'm like, I should not be driving this car. Like I should be like not behind the wheel right now, because I was so tired, you know, like so exhausted, so tired. And you know, like you're not, no one gives you like slack really. Like they're all like, okay, like bounce back. Like, come on. Right. It's like, you're supposed to be right back in the saddle again. And it's so sad. Like, it's no wonder so many women struggle postpartum, you know?
And then also my husband just had a hernia operation, and he was like cut open. And he was like, honestly, he said to me, how did you have a C-section? They literally cut open, I think, 7 layers of muscle and flesh. And then they hand you a newborn baby. And then, and then you start to breastfeed. For me was not easy. And my nipples were like crusting over and bleeding. So it's like, imagine your nipples are bleeding and then you have to have something suck on it. I was like, imagine
over and over.
Like your penis. And it's like, it's literally been hit many, many times and it's bleeding. And then someone has to flick it again. And he's like, oh my gosh. And I was like, yeah, that's what it's like. And I'm, all these people listening going, I'm never having kids, but it's also beautiful and amazing. And that's nature and life, right?
Yeah,
but it's almost like we have to suffer. This is what my husband said. It's like in life, you have to suffer to really realize what is good, to like really enjoy life. You have to suffer.
Yeah.
It also makes you more grateful.
It's almost like it's not paying for, but it's a transaction of energy, right?
Yeah.
Like this big new wave is coming at you, but with that is the whole spectrum of stuff that comes, you know? And it's like rock stars, amazing. I don't know. Well, not only have I not like met somebody that I can see that with, but I would be very scared about my own mental health going into it. You know what I mean? I don't, not that we're even talking, but like babies, I don't know. I watch nothing but baby stuff on TikTok. I love watching dumb little babies do their thing. My friends are like, what are you watching? Nobody's doing that, but they're so sweet. I just can't tell if it's meant for me.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Hard to know. And it's also, I don't feel like you ever know, you know, it just, I knew that I had this intense need to birth a baby. Like it just came out of nowhere. Like it came out of nowhere and I wasn't feeling like I wanted to be a mom. And then I just hit me. And I don't know if that's the feeling or if you just don't know, but you think, well, might as well try. I don't know.
Right.
So do you feel like you don't know? So do you feel like you don't know, or are you definitive about having kids or not?
I feel like I don't know. I don't know if the present, like not even the right situation, but like that person that I feel, you know, that about, and like, gosh, that responsibility, fearing like what the depression would, like just a lot of the spectrum. And just knowing that, like, I love being part of the village for kids in their lives. You know what I mean? The village that raises the kids for whichever kid I come across. It's just, gosh, the most beautiful exchange of energy. I love kids, but I'm not certain. I'm just not quite certain whether they're mine, but I would love to just continue to work with kids in my life and like, you know, be a part of that energy, because it's so healing and it's so wonderful, you know, but I don't know that it's for me.
You know, and I think that that's a great and an honest response, because for a lot of people, it isn't. And I think so much of, you know, the time women, especially who don't want to have kids, are like shamed for it, you know, and it's like, people try to put guilt on them. I mean, I know how that feels, because I thought myself I wasn't going to have children. And so, you know, when it happened and it was a surprise, it turned out obviously to be the best surprise of my life. And we were so grateful that we became parents. But I remember just being guilted. I mean, by a lot of the time by men who said that it was my duty to have kids and, you know, and put their two cents in. And it's just, it's such a shame because no matter which path a woman chooses, it should be her path. And there shouldn't be any, like, you know, guilt associated with that, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think that everything I'm seeing about, like, this generation sort of like putting like women don't need to have children up there and being very confident in that decision. I remember the first person that I had heard made that decision. She was one of my yoga teachers in Arizona, and she was, you know, she was 30 or 32, whatever. And she was like, yeah, we're not going to have kids. And it was the first time that I had understood that that could be a choice, like, for somebody, and that they could rest in that, like, with so much confidence. And that could be something that sort of, you know, chartered their lives, is that decision not to have that and to make other decisions. So I think that's really interesting. I also think that I grew up, which is my mom, which is the single mom in the household, right? I never lived with, you know, a dad or an opposite sex parent in the house, or like any siblings in anything like that. My grandma also lost her husband when she was 38 and she never, or when he was 38 and she never remarried after that, right? She raised the kids and did whatever. So I think like these singular woman households is something that's not foreign to me, and that I don't see as, like, there's not an ideal that I'm chasing that I saw when I was younger,
right?
You know what I mean? Or anything that I'm trying to like model after. Well, I guess I am with the single woman household, right? But I mean, like, that,
you're like,
that
epiphany.
that family unit type thing. I don't think that I crave that, or as because I don't know it that well. You know what I mean?
Did you ever have a relationship with your dad, or was he just not in the picture?
No, I did. I definitely did. So I moved to LA when I was 12, and I did the on and off visitation with him from the start. Like, they were separated before I came out. And then I remember just feeling a little bit uncomfortable, like, being at my dad's house, not for any like nefarious or strange reason, but he had like other girlfriends that he'd bring to the house. And I remember this wild feeling of jealousy. Like, it was the first twinges of jealousy, and it confused me so much because he was giving all this attention to these other women. And I'm like, dude, I only get to see you every other weekend. Like, postpone your date. I didn't know that I was thinking that then, but my God, like, that was the birth of this really jealous feeling. You want to be the apple of your father's eye, right? Mm-hmm. And that, I think I just killed myself trying to be that to him. And that just wasn't what it was. And my dad and I have gone up and down the emotional roller coaster. I mean, I've blamed him for everything. I've forgiven him for everything. I've re-blamed him. Like, you know, I've judged the crap out of him. But at the end of the day, sort of during my sobriety work, I just realized that I would never want him to feel as lonely and sad and scared as I have been in my life. Mm. And that he can always have me as like a bright energy spot for him. Like, I'm here for you. And I'm going to make these calls, but I'm also not going to put it on me to be the relationship again at this point to keep chasing you. Because at a certain point, I feel like it almost makes you uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Just this, this relationship that I think just, you know, is what it is. But to get past that feeling of having him as my narrative for everything I said, well, my dad, my parents, you know what I mean? Letting go of that in your 20s narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing, like, pain is real. People not getting help is real. Mm-hmm. And, like, I'm not going to hold that against him anymore, because I found somebody to really help me. I found help. And I was one of the lucky ones. And for whatever I can do to try to extend that to him, I can't make him take it, you know? Yeah. And it's maybe not for him, but I just, God, I love him in a way that I never have. And yet I don't feel like that will be, you know, overshared or anything, you know? It's just like, is what it is. And I think he knows, like, I'm here, you know? I hold nothing but love for him. And I just want him to be some kind of fulfilled, some kind of happy, you know? He just doesn't see that for himself. And I'm like, my dude, it's cool. It's cool. I promise.
And you mentioned, you know, you kind of discovered a lot of that during your sobriety work, which I know, that's been recent, right? In the last couple of years.
Yes.
So that was so after the last time you were chatting with us, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So I still had a couple of years to go on and off of relapse after that.
So that was 2020, right?
2020. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So the pandemic really, I really reverted during that time before I even knew what was happening. It's like, I knew, but I like my body just went into this stasis that it just went and got the things. And yeah. So
what was your drug? Sorry to interrupt. What was your drug of choice? Like what was the drug that you were, or alcohol that you were running from?
So Adderall was always horrible for me. Like it wasn't the Adderall, like, oh, let's just pop a couple on a day. It's like I stayed up for 5 days straight and no eating, sleep deprivation, malnutrition, just was like a crazy person. So I started to even that out with some Xanax. So you got too high on the Adderall, then you pop a Xanax, then you pop another Adderall, save, then you pop a Xanax. And then because that wasn't always accessible or was too expensive, I started drinking really heavily. And I would get a bottle of Milagro, the tequila. And I was not a mixed drink person. Nope. You're either going to just take straight shots from the bottle and like just as, and then the Adderall is kind of keeping you back. It was just a cocktail of hell. And I finally did it for the last time. And I knew it was the last time. I call it Shit Show Weekend 1 and 2. Mm. And August 31st, 2021 is my date. Mm. And I decided to get the mental help that I needed because the addiction was really secondary to the thing that I was feeling and trying to run from, right? So that's when I realized that I had BPD, which answered so many questions.
Yeah.
And that's when I started to focus on that. And the sobriety just became, you know, like second nature after that, when I started focusing on the root issue. I mean, there are still obviously things that, I mean, I don't feel triggered around drugs or alcohol now, but that's not to say, I mean, people are in the program for 10 years and go out. So there is a diligency about my diligency. I don't know.
I love that word. So we're going to use it.
Yeah. Of like, what was I just talking about? Sorry.
Oh, about because people relapse. He said,
So I just was like, I there's a diligency in the program that you have to keep, right? Mm-hmm. Making amends, making sure. So here's the thing that I didn't get. You wake up with the alcoholism and then you diffuse it. You wake up with your character defects, in other words, right? You wake up with anytime that you're not heard, you react. You wake up with all that crap, right? And then you enable the program, you pray, you meditate, which is, these are simple things that, you know, a wellness program brings, but I had to have it seriously attached to my health to bring it into my life. And so you wake up with the ism, and I wake up with the BPD, and I do what I can to try to give myself the best possible start to the day, eat medicine, you know what I mean? Don't look at my phone right away. And then I just try to check myself the whole day, each and every time. I don't have the luxury of long lasting anger. That's that's kind of what they say. It's because it's you can't remain in that emotional gray area for too long. You really got to put boundaries on what you're feeling and your behavior, you know? And that's a lot of what DBT is. It's like, look, we know you're doing the best you can, but you got to try a little bit harder to handle your BPD. It's called dialectical behavioral therapy, which is just like the balance of opposites, you know? So like, yes, you're doing the best you can, but you got to find the energy to do better.
And the alcoholism and taking drugs is just the Band-Aid, right? It's just, it's how to make yourself feel better. And I so relate to when you say, like, I wake up every single morning with severe anxiety and I don't even know why. Like, it's so programmed in me about child actor like you. I think, I don't know if I was born this way, if I became this way. I don't know if it was, you know, genetic or environment, but I wake up and I panic about perfectionism and, you know, do I even want to do this podcast because I don't have the right lighting? And why is my hair break? Like, just ridiculous things that are so meaningless to the outside world, but for me, they're so big. And it's hard with kids because, you know, they wake up at 6 a.m. and they're like, you know, be the person I need you to be right now. And I'm not even the person I want to be for myself. And I it's a hard one for me in the morning. Like, it's funny when you say you wake up in the morning and you have the ism. So I don't know, mine's not alcoholism, but I have the perfectionism. I have the anxietyism. I have the panicism, and I have to regulate myself, and I'm not on medication because I'm scared. Honestly, I think I probably should be on medication, but I'm so afraid to take the medication that will help me because I'm afraid of what the medication might do. Will I feel worse? And I think a lot of people feel that way. And I think it's really brave of you to be talking about it. You know, Lucy came out and said that I had no idea that Lucy was struggling with alcohol. I don't know if you did, but I didn't know that. I knew that she had back in the day, but I didn't know on Pretty Liars and continuously now that she was still struggling with alcoholism. She looks perfect, right?
No, I know a couple of mutual friends. And so just in response to my sobriety, they were like, wow, you know, it seems to be a good thing. There was no talking or just, you know, gossiping about the language at all. It was just like in the note of sobriety, like she has also achieved that. And I think, gosh, good for her, man. I knew a little bit on set and whatever. And I'm just so, so proud of her. Like, it literally doesn't matter what's going on in your outside life, man. You wake up with the ism and you can't shake it. That builds up for a month, 6 months, a year, and you just can't battle it anymore. You know what I mean? And so, the right help. And it's like, look, I totally, totally feel that. Like, and I also think you really take care of your body and your mind and your health with like nutrition. And I know that that is such
imagine how much worse it could have been. Like, you know, if exactly. I did it, that's what I think. Exactly. Like, so
I can understand how medicine would sort of be this like, what? Right. I'm doing literally
I'm standing on my head and taking Curicatin.
Yeah. So I, it just came to a point where I couldn't not. And so, but you know, once I became aware of it and I didn't need it to be so drastically, just getting into the therapy and like whatever, but the medication really does work for me. And so, that's just what I'm going to stick on for now until I have better coping skills. But like yourself, I don't want to be attached to a medicine forever. Like, I don't want to need anything forever to like whatever. And so I'm just hoping and praying that with more, you know, emotional practice and work, because that's really what it is. You can grow out of BPD a little bit. You know what I mean? You can retrain those grooves in your brain. You can really be aware of those emotional responses, right? And so it's not like you grow out of it, but you can keep a real eye on it to where it becomes second nature. I think.
Because didn't you think it was bipolar? Well, last time we spoke, you had said that it was bipolar. And then were you misdiagnosed?
I was. So it is not a bipolar thing. Bipolar, it happens a little bit more, like the time period lasts longer. Mm. You know what I mean? Of your emotional state or fugue state. It and the dissociation lasts for a longer period of time. With BPD, it's usually like... like it, I mean, it just like racks your brain like crazy. And so then you have to make all these amends to the people that you're like, I'm fine now. I'm sorry I told you to fuck off and that you were the worst thing in the world, but I'm all right now. So just a whole bunch of that back and forth and impulsivity and like all of that was just like the perfect concoction for a drug problem.
Yeah.
And what's the official, what's your official diagnosis? Like, did they say like, this is what it is?
Yes. My therapist was like, all right, I can tell you 99% sure that this is exactly what you have. And I read some more into it and I was like, I absolutely think that this is what it is. And it's from this early, like the main symptom of it is a real or perceived abandonment, right? I go into a tailspin. I have done things that I can't even like say when I have like thought somebody was going to leave me. I mean, really crazy stuff. Mm. And it's just learning. I mean, it's that whole forgiveness with my dad. It's all of this stuff coming full circle. You know what I mean? Realizing how many things started with moments that are snapshots in my brain. How many things started with that? This is where you lost your voice. This is like where you lost your confidence. This is, you know. And doing that work, I think, and being able to forgive my dad, man.
That's huge.
Yeah. Just a lot of, it all kind of snowballs after a while. And Forgiveness, so I'm like the happiest I've ever been, and yet I'm still struggle with depression.
Yeah.
It's like so annoying.
It's also so interesting to me too that so many people, and this is amazing that we're all talking about this, and thank you for being so honest, that people that are struggling actually pursue careers
right.
that put them out in the front, you know, like mm-hmm. while, you know, not really speaking about it, which of course you guys do for sure. But like, you know, going after these careers that kind of put you out front. I think it's just an interesting mm-hmm. kind of dynamic. Why do you think that is, you yeah. know? What is it?
BPD is like an emotional dysregulation disorder. So while I think it is the weakest part of me, I also think that it is the mm-hmm. strongest part of me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That dysregulation works for me. And so that was actually a lot of the reason that I wasn't diagnosed sooner, is that I thought I was just an actress. You're just a real passionate actress. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're supposed to mess up your life like this. Mm. You're just good at your job. And then on set, you'd be so praised for this same behavior. Right. Out of context and out of boundaries that you were getting in such trouble for, mm-hmm. you were ruining your life about. And yet those were the,
It's funny because I see, you know, people message me after, like, if they've watched a scene that I've done or whatever, and they're like, you seem so nice and normal and stable. I can't believe you could go off the rails like that in this movie. And I'm like, this is my life. Like, what are you? This is a normal Friday night. If my husband did something, I like lost my mind and drove for like an hour. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, what you see is just a channeling of what I have inside me. Mm-hmm. On a daily basis, you know, mm-hmm. you keep your shit together and you put out I love your Instagram and your TikTok is doing so well, by the way. Like, you are just exploding with all that stuff because I think you're being totally honest about what's happening inside and you're showing it on the outside. And there's no, like, you're not holding anything back. And I think so many people on social media, and I do it sometimes. I'm like, you know, project the perfect life, project that you love being a mom all the time, project that you have the perfect relationship. And it's just not the case. Like, we're all struggling with something. And I think the more honest we are, the less people feel alone and they connect with you.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But I think that's why your show, also your new podcast, is doing so well, is because you guys are just so honest and you're so real. And I do, like you said before we started shooting this, that it's something that, like, that passion and that connection and that something that you didn't know that you still had. And I can see that. And I think that is why people are watching. That is why people are listening, because they can see you sort of like figuring something out in front of everyone, you know,
like in real time, in real time.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I appreciate that. Cause that is exactly my life. And here's the deal. I can say definitively, for the first time since I've known what it actually means, is that I trust myself.
Mm.
I trust myself, even with the outbursts, like, they're becoming fewer, and I can also de-escalate quicker. And like the things are, everything is becoming better. And it's like, I can trust myself. I can trust myself out. I can trust myself in an uncomfortable situation. Mm. I'm here for me. I'm not abandoning ship anymore. Mm. And I was accumulating that knowledge and that courage for so long, like 5.5 years of trying to do this sober thing. And yeah. And it finally happened. Like, it finally happened. And that switch over was like, cause they talk about it in the program, just like that moment, moment where you know, and I'm going to be honest, I never knew before. There was just shame attached to waking up from the relapse. Right.
Mm.
Biggest thing I've learned, that shame, you do not put yourself, you don't victimize yourself. Don't say, oh, yes, you are so stupid, stupid, stupid. Like, I would lay here, and the two demons inside my head, the little girl and the demon, would literally fight and be like, I know you're so stupid. I know I'm stupid. Blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
And like, I don't do that anymore because I don't even indulge in that, because that's an indulgence after a while, right? Mm-hmm. And the fact that like that has become so not giving me the thing that it used to, that it's not even like a thing. It's so impotent now. And I never thought that that voice would like have less power than my reason or my rationale, you know? And so that's the part that I stopped doing too. It's like victimizing yourself again for a problem behavior because you like want to tell yourself you're bad and you want to, you know what I mean? Like,
and you get a dopamine rush. They say that you actually get dopamine from negative talk. So if you're low on dopamine, I didn't know this. I was like, wait, what? People should have told us this. When you are low on dopamine, you actually get addicted to negative thoughts because it gives you a dopamine rush. It actually makes you feel better when you're talking negatively, but then it makes you feel worse. It's like this, it's this dance with the devil. Yeah.
That is exactly what I was experiencing. I have goosebumps. That is wild.
Up
and that is the dopamine's coming back up, and it's,
I know it's this whole sustaining. Dopamine. I'm always searching for it, and I think actors search for it more than normal people or entertainers. Like I think about Taylor Swift, right? And they're like, oh my god, look how amazing, and I'm like, that is so amazing. But when she gets off that stage, I'm telling you, all that dopamine, adrenaline, cortisol, all the good things, serotonin that she's feeling on stage, I'm telling you, when she gets off that stage, it lasts for about an hour. And then she probably feels off for a while. Like I don't know where her mental health is, but she probably has to really work at herself and realize like, that's not real. I just got a huge hit, right? It's like a drug hit. And then you come down from it and you actually feel quite lonely. That's what Lady Gaga talks about. You actually feel really lonely and really low afterwards because you've had all those endorphins that are natural. And then where do they go?
That's interesting. Yeah. Cause I mean, if that's probably the top of the food chain, when you're talking like that level of like the hit, you know?
And that's why you search that's for it. Crazy. That's why a lot of entertainers search for it. Cause they come off stage and then they drink because they're trying to get that dopamine back again. Right. Or they have sex addiction or they have drug addiction or whatever, the gambling, because they're trying to get that dopamine rush back up after they've had it naturally. So that's why a lot of, you know, and it took me a long time to learn this. It was like, I'm searching for dopamine. And sometimes I search it in conflict and I search in conflict with my husband and he'll say it to me and I feel ashamed and I have to work on that. But he'll be like, you're searching for dopamine right now. There's nothing wrong. Like, we're not like this fight that we're having over the fucking tortilla in the fridge is not enough to be this angry. And I'm like, like it takes a lot for me to go, wow, I'm searching for dopamine. Mm-hmm. I'm searching for it.
Is that your new short film?
Yeah.
Searching
for dopamine.
That is the best. That is the best.
You do. And you search it in many different, like, this is dopamine, right? A podcast. Mm-hmm. So we will feel better after this. But if you're not having that dopamine through, like, in healthy ways, which is friendships and exercise and meditation and a massage, all those healthy ways you get dopamine, you search for it through phone and alcohol and fighting. Mm-hmm. And I get a lot of dopamine from my phone, but it also makes me really miserable. You know, it's giving us that quick hit of dopamine. That's why TikTok does so well, is because we're getting these fake short bursts of dopamine and then it's coming up and then going down, then coming up and going down. That's why so many, they say that kids are so much more anxious and depressed now that they have smartphones, that my daughter's not going to get one until she's 16. I don't care. I do not care. I am. She can fight me all she wants. I don't care. She can have a flip phone. She can call me and she can call her friends. No. She can speak to her friends for hours on the phone. Happy with that. But she's not sitting there flicking on apps because I know that it's going to affect her mental health.
No social media at all.
No way. When she's 18, she can have social media. When she's 18. She can choose.
Yep.
Wow. Right on.
Yeah.
Wow. I can't imagine what it's like to navigate the world, like all the changes for yourself and then your kid. Like that's got to be tough. But like
it's amazing though. Like, it's like, amazing so though. Energy. Right. And it's amazing in this age group already. These 8, 9 year olds. Some of them already have social media.
Oh, of course they do.
Frightening. You know, it's so scary.
One of my favorite people in the world is little 8-year-old that I've known since she was 6. She's been banned off of TikTok already. Wow. And I'm just like, how? Because you're stumbling into or putting on content that you are not, that you don't know about yet. You don't even know what you're doing. Like, it's not just a little dance around, you know? And it's like, take it out. And it, like, it's really disheartening. I mean,
And I wonder, like, I asked this comment on my Instagram. I said, you know, what do you guys think about makeup? So my kid is 9.
Oh my
God. She wants to wear makeup. And so I look like, what's the reason? The reason is she wants to look better. She wants to look more attractive for who? Probably soon the opposite sex. Like, you know, kids are getting their period now at 11, which I find it crazy to me. I remember people getting them 15, 14, 15, maybe 13. I think it's the food supply. I think it's the water supply. I think it's the estrogen in the foods. Kids are getting it at 11, which means that they're going through puberty at 11 and they're wanting to attract the opposite sex by wearing lipstick and their hair. And it's a hard one for me because, you know, you don't want to over sexualize your kid too young, but you also don't want them to feel like the only weirdo in the group who's like not wearing mascara. Like, you don't, you know,
that was always a thing.
You know what I've been doing? I've just kind of like, when she inquires about it, you know, I say, sure, you know, you can play in mommy's makeup or what have you. I think too, because especially of like our businesses and like what we do, we get sent products and it, you know, there's a lot of makeup and stuff like that involved. And I hope maybe as long as like what I've been doing is just kind of making it a play thing. Like, oh, here you can play. We'll play together. We'll make it a play thing. I'm hoping, I don't know. We'll see, I guess, in the years to come, but you're right. Like, I don't want her to rely on it as a crutch for like making herself pretty or thinking that she needs that to feel pretty or feel beautiful, you know. It's a slippery slope.
I mean, good Lord.
You're like, I'm not having kids. I'm like, good idea.
You guys are such rock stars. Like, I literally can't believe, like, and Tamron, I can't believe that you, like, all your talks to your audience are so like intimate, you know. And I think like that's what makes it like so lovely and perfect. Like, I get from your life that you're just like a very open and sharing and vulnerable person. And like, you're always sharing what worked for you with other people. And it's really special, that kind of community, you know what I mean? That kind of support. So that's the feeling I get what you give out. And I'm not even like your demographic of like kids and all of that, but I find myself listening because it's so calming and peaceful and intimate.
Yeah, I just, I've never had a filter. That's a problem. My husband said to me that day, he goes, you don't have to say everything that you think. Like, if it enters your brain, you don't have to say it out loud. I'm like, really? I'm like, he's like, yeah, because your thoughts change in about half an hour or 10 minutes. And I'm like, huh, maybe you're right. And I've just never had a filter. And, but that being said, there are some painful spots within myself that are things that I've done in my life or my fears that maybe are too intimate, you know? And I'm sure you have that too with your podcast. You're like, how, you know, I was listening to Glennon Doyle's podcast and she said there's something called packaged vulnerability. And I was really nervous for a while and felt ashamed. I was like, well, is that what I give off? You know, packaged vulnerability. And packaged vulnerability is like vulnerability that you feel very safe and you put it in a neat little bow and in a box and then you give it out into the world and you go, I feel comfortable with this. I had miscarriages and it hurt. There you go. But like the real vulnerability, the stuff that keeps you up at night, the stuff that, you know, makes you feel like you're not enough or that you, you know, like what's the meaning of your life in this world? Like, do I go that deep? You know, like, do I really share all that? And maybe the answer is you don't have to. Maybe there's there are secrets that you're allowed to keep with you because they're part of who you are that maybe I don't share a lot about my kids. Actually, like you might think I do, but there's some things we're struggling with one of them. And I'm pretty careful because of her privacy. And also like, I don't know how I feel about it all. And I just, I don't know. There's maybe, maybe some of the secrets, they say secrets keep you safe. And I'm like, maybe I'm allowed to be safe sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I actually wanted to incorporate that more into my persona at this point, is to keep a few more secrets, because I was just such a raw, wounded, like just a wound ball, like a ball of wounded rubber bands. Like, that's what I was, that I didn't even have the energy to put like a cover or a safety cover or a anything over what I was doing. Like, I just, the pain was just like bleeding out of me. Yeah. And while I'm proud of like what I was able to share, I think some boundaries around what you share too. I mean, there's one thing in my life that I will never share that I know that I have, but like, I think it's okay to, I don't know. Yeah. I just think it's okay to not have like secrets. Have those secrets for yourself, because that's something I never really had for myself. I mean, these actors are people who have not signed over their life, but accepted at an early age to like have this anonymous public, this anonymous audience, always, you know what I mean? You're always like putting on for them. Mm-hmm. And now I've realized that I can curate the show a little bit, you know what I mean? And that for me is what's going to be most potent going forward, right? Not just this like, you know, these Uno cards all over the, what about pickup sticks? I went from rubber bands to pickup sticks, all the things. Not so much of that anymore. I think it's going to serve my feminine more to, yeah, just curate a little bit more of what I put out. And that doesn't mean like not being authentic, because like that will always be me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, having that private life that I don't think I've ever enjoyed, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a valuable point. I mean, I think you can be authentic and be yourself and share about yourself, but also have private moments. You know, it's a balance. It's a balance, right? I mean, it's hard. I find it very hard to share 100%. Like,
honestly, I still don't feel like I know you fully. I'm serious. And I love you. I love you like you're my sister, but there's something about, I don't know. I still, there's a part that I can't fall into.
You're like, what is going on? Like, what is your deal? I can't, it's, I don't know. I guess it's a protective mechanism that I have, you know, where I'm like, I can like share some, but then I like pull back, and then I share and I pull back. And I don't know. I can't like pinpoint just like one single like episode or one single thing. I mean, I know like I'm the oldest daughter and I'm very protective of family and friends and things like that. So I guess that translates into myself too, but I don't know, maybe it's an insecurity too. Maybe I don't feel secure enough to share, you know, and for the reaction of what people, you know, will say or think, I don't know. I'm trying to work through some of that. I know I have to get better about it, but like at the same time too, I kind of like to keep some things close to the chest, you know?
Yeah. You don't like to be, girl. You don't like to work even right though now. You can drain. I feel like you don't like to be messy. Like, messy mentally is what I mean. Like, I feel like there's a part of you that is close. Like, I've seen you once break down, but like, you know, and that is your honesty, and that my husband doesn't cry a lot at all. And I think maybe tears or breaking down or being mentally messy is a weakness for you. And you don't like to feel weak because, you know, for whatever reason, maybe you had to be the older sister and you had to take care of everyone, and weakness means that people die like in your own, you know, so you have to be in the animal pack. You have to be strong, you know, you have to protect people. Mm-hmm. So whatever that is, I just think it's all like we're all just trying to survive. Right?
It's true. I mean, and we don't even like count the times that somebody has made us feel silly or stupid, and we've like stacked that up, you know?
Yes.
And like doing this like AA homework, which is, dude, I've been in an AA the whole time I've been trying to get sober. I didn't get it until everybody's like, there's a moment that you get it. And I was like, what the? I have come to so many stupid meetings. I'm staring, and yet I'm on drugs the next week. Like, what? Yeah. And I got it. The spiritual change happened. And so part of the work is like writing out a timeline of your life, and then writing out all these people you need to make amends to and why. So you go to like, what happened? What did that affect in you? Personal relationships, blah, 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 blah. Like financial security, emotional security. What did that affect in you? What could you have done differently? And then what fear stopped you from doing it differently? Right. So it holds you accountable, but it also holds you in like, what was scaring you from doing this thing that you knew that you could do? Right. And writing that out about 30 plus people on this list. I did like months of writing and work, and what blew my mind was that a lot of the character defects were the same. They just, there's just like 5 character defects that followed me for these specific reasons, you know? And just writing that down, I'd never taken an inventory of my life or my hurts or my wrongs. And that really helped me too. I actually went through an experience with my friend where it's like, one of my character defects was not being happy for somebody that I loved when they were achieving something. Horrible thing to say, horrible thing to feel.
I think a lot of people feel that.
Do you know?
Yeah.
And so, but I was actually able, I went and did an emergency 4th step. Emergency. I was on the phone like, I care about this person so much, but I can't stop. I need the right to say. And so like, I did my 4th step on her and I ended up just being able to share it with her and hug her. And she was like, okay. And she accepted where I was at and it allowed me to accept that. And now that feeling, I don't feel that, at least with her. Like I have like, I stopped that feeling in its tracks by just putting light on it and being like, I'm a little bit jealous right now. And that's okay. We're not going to live in that or make decisions from that, but that jealousy is okay. Like your friend is a rock star and that's awesome, you know? And just being happy for people, for their little wins. That is something that has like taken over my heart. And that never really was there because I didn't think there was enough to go around. And I didn't think that if they had something that brought them any happiness beyond me, that I would be less important, that they would leave, that.
Interesting. Because you said, you just said something, because I was about to say to you, I have those feelings, which is not all the time, but I have those feelings, which is the first time I've ever said that out loud. But when you said it's because it's about you, see, it's not the same reason that I have those feelings that you do. The reason that I feel that way is because if somebody else is achieving something, then I must not be good enough. Whereas yours is if somebody else achieves something, then they don't want to be with you. Like you're not, you know, it's the same, like you're not good enough, but it's because they don't want you. Whereas for me, it's like, well, if I'm not the top podcast, or if I'm not on the top show, or if I'm not have the best relationship, or if I don't have 6 kids and other people do and they seem happy, then I am a loser. And it's funny because when you compare yourself, which is the death of happiness, when you compare yourself and you look outwards and you're like, oh my God, that person's achieving and I'm not, it comes across as like envy and hate, but it's really not. You're judging yourself. Like you're judging yourself. And that's why we compare, is because we don't like who we are in that moment, you know, or who we are, or where we are in our lives. And that's something I'm really struggling with and dealing with and trying to overcome too. It's like, why do I compare myself so much when other people probably look at my life and go, she's doing well, you know, why do I always feel like I'm not?
Yeah.
Maybe, I don't know. Maybe, do you think it was, just goes back to like kind of being in the spotlight as a child, like that whole sort of growing up in front of the camera, you think?
Yeah. And I also think, you know, my mom was a very successful singer in South Africa, just very successful director. And then when she came to Australia, she became a stay-at-home mom for us and she loved it, but I could always tell that there was something missing for her. And I think that there's a part of it that me being successful, she loved as well, because it was like, well, if she didn't do it, at least I did, you know, like at least, and it wasn't a negative thing. She was very supportive and very loving. But I felt like I had to do it. I had to be successful because she gave me so much and she gave up so much. So there's, even though it's not supposed to be a burden, there's, as you get older, you're like, oh, there's a burden in that to like, make sure that she gets seen through me into the world. And so if someone else is doing more than I am, then I didn't like make it for her or like my family. I don't know. There's like a lot to unpack there.
You didn't want
to
let her down too.
I don't want to like, let her down. I don't want to be, I also don't want to leave this world not achieving what I know I can. And I think, Lindsay, you probably feel that way too. It's like, are you happy in your career? Like, do you feel like there's so much more that you're meant to be doing in this life that you're not? And I think I get really scared about time and how time is moving so fast. And like, do I have enough time to show the world? Maybe it's not the world. It's maybe just show myself all the things I know I can do. You know?
Yep.
That was stunning. That was just like a... And to be honest with you, like, just in a totally different way, I have that with my mom. She was a single mom who moved out to LA with me when I was 12. And I feel very much like I tried to push myself in this industry when I was far past needing a break, for that, for her dream. That it was also always a very big part of my path, was this dream that she had. And I just wanted to achieve it for both of us so bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I have to realize that, like, my mom's stuff is her own, and no matter what I achieve for us, it's not going to change like what she has to do for herself. And unfortunately, my mom is not somebody who like the high vibe around her, just it's still not going to bring her up. And that's just with me, and specifically with my mom. Like, she's got to do that work herself, right? So no matter like what I achieved, it's like it didn't touch her core, you know, just didn't touch her. And it's like, but I thought this was the mission. And it turns out there's a totally different mission to be had. And she's doing that on her own. And I hate it, because I want her to be right here. And I also know that for both of us, it's best that we're here. Like, God, that relationship is just so painful. And like, unpacking, like, okay, what do I actually want to contribute to this business? Do I care about being in front of the camera? I mean, that will always be something that I love, but teaching, amplifying other people's energy, this podcast, like, I think I'm an amplifier of energy beyond anything, right? And so just to find the place that I fit. And maybe that's not in front of the camera anymore. I don't have a lot of energy to like get myself ready and print about.
I don't have energy to fight the fight in me. Like, I want to be an entertainer, but just the fight to like fight is exhausting.
And especially now when all the rules are changing and different, and yes, evolution, that's great. But there's a mourning of like, I feel like the industry that we entered, do you know what I mean? Because it's not the same. And
You don't walk in, you don't audition, you're sending in self tapes and doing a million takes. I don't know if you do. It's like the perfect one to send in. Wasting so much time. I mean, my husband and I have always done it outside. I think if anyone wants to enter the entertainment business, if you're listening, my advice is just like, you just got to do it yourself. Like, that's the only control that you can kind of have, because that old way that you and I were talking about is over. Yeah.
It's over.
It's a gift. Actually, in that way, social media is a gift to get yourself out there, and, you know, especially in the entertainment world, and get taken notice of. And so in that way, it's kind of good, you know?
I mean, to take the power in a different way in our own hands. I feel like it is putting more power in our hands. I feel like I'm bringing stuff up that I never thought I'd be capable of when I was just, I say just an actress, because it was just a singular identity. You know what I mean? There was no variety. There was no spice of life in that. There was literally just this one entity that was literally holding its breath for as long as it could, you know, and not being touched by anything else. I just said that about, you know, my mom, but like, it's like nothing could touch me before this certain time.
And do you worry, because I mean, I always worry, do you worry financially being an actress? And I mean, LA is so expensive. We left Nashville, like, we saved so much money just doing the same things in Nashville, but just leaving LA, because LA is so expensive. But I'm like, do you, like, because I'm always, I don't know if I have a scarcity mindset, but I'm always worried about finances, because it's like feast or famine. So I wake up like, oh my gosh, I got to make money. Like, I got to be, you know, I got to figure it out. I got to save my family. So like, do you worry about money? And like, you know, has the podcast been helpful in that way? Or, you know, is it just starting? Like, how does that all work?
So I am endlessly worried about money, because I do live in a scarcity mindset. My mom and I mean, we were always, you know, we were comfortable, but we weren't like well off, and she brought in a single mom like income and whatever. And so I I, from a very early age, that worried me. And then I got to LA and it started to be like a survival necessity. Like, how long are we going to be able to stay out here? Like, our, like, I didn't want to worry my mom. I knew that these opportunities were taking resources from us. And if there wasn't any payback, like, you know, and so there was this scarcity mindset. And then we started to make money, then a lot, you know, the feast or famine thing. And now, I've got my hustle down to kind of a science. And I have places that I can go, like, you know, TikTok brand that, like, I have a few different irons in the fire that something always lights up if, you know, but those, I've had to add those irons to the fire. Holy moly. Like, and I've had to, like, lean on friends a lot. And, you know, this podcast, like I said, it is just getting started. So I think it's going to be, you know, I think it's going to be great, but it's not quite there yet, you know? And so I worry constantly about money. But there's really only so much worry you can do.
I know.
Like, all I can really do is hustle. Like, I don't know what else to do. And I'm just praying for that time that I have money in my bank account again and can just, like, just chill for a minute.
Because I know. The hustle is exhausting.
Stressive. Yeah, it is awful.
Do you reach out to brands yourself, or are you, do people do that for you?
So both. Right. Yeah. I have a brand manager. He actually lives in Canada. So, like, you know, he's got that market covered. And, you know, he helps me with brands here. But also, I've gotten in touch with a lot of brands on my own and tried to, like, attach people to people and to events and that kind of thing. So I've gotten a little bit of, you know, stuff from that. But I reach out myself. And, you know, I always check that SAG residuals thing because that's still coming through a little bit,
but I don't know.
It's
probably why we're going to have to go on strike.
And, you know, Cameo's been, like, a super amazing outlet for me. You know, Reels and TikTok and stuff like that, but just a lot of, like, boots on the ground, digital email, just emailing.
It's always a hustle, right?
It was never this kind of a hustle for me, and it's actually kind of incredible because I didn't know that I was capable of hustling like this, you know. And it's kind of a rush to know that, like, I did this project start to finish on my own. I edited it. I created it. I did all this stuff. And now I'm going to put it out. So that part I really do like.
When I'm in LA, I'd love to see you. So.
Oh, my gosh.
Don't be a stranger.
Like, do silly things, but we'll also hug and I'll lift up your tiny body.
I don't know if it's tiny anymore. You'll lift up my saggy old body.
Oh my god. And Roxy, where the heck are you? You're not.
Yes, I'm in LA too. We need to make a reunion.
We're pulling this girl out. We're gonna go have a lunch. We're gonna keep this therapy session going. And, like, you are so wonderful and lovely. Your podcast has been going for, like,
4 years.
4 years?
Yeah. Why have we not given up? Just kidding.
Because the people need it.
The people need it.
And you guys were, like, right on the tipping forefront of all that happening, you know, like, good for you.
It was helpful.
That was definitely helpful. I think, like, we first got into it and it's been such an amazing learning curve. Like, and we put truly so much of ourselves into it. It's like our blood, sweat, and tears. Like you're saying, it's just, it's a lot of work, but it's so gratifying too.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Every time I want to quit, I'm just like, I do an episode and I'm like, I love this.
You walk
like,
away.
Oh, just, I really like it. Shit.
It feels like a big group hug. And then you're going away with these little tidbits about yourself. You know what I mean?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like, I've learned so much.
I know.
Especially, like, coming from, like, Tam and I feel like you were so good and, like, really into, like, the self-help world and, like, all the experts and everything. And I really started listening in more when we started doing this. And just in that time, I've learned so much that I would have never probably taken the time to learn about myself and about other people. Yeah. And it's really quite amazing. It's like therapy almost, you know?
It's definitely like therapy.
Right?
Totally.
And my beautiful people, if I don't leave right now, I'm going to be kicked out of this. I'm supposed to go down into the city. I'm staying at my parents' house and it's like so far away. And they're texting me like, we're there, we're here. And I'm like, oh shit. It's like 45 minutes away.
You're like, I haven't left.
Surprise video.
So I'm like, I got to go. I know. Yeah. But I love you so much. And tell everyone where they can find you.
Okay, so I'm on TikTok and Instagram at Lady M Shosters, and then the Ned's Pod, Ned's Podcast Survival Guide at Ned's Pod on TikTok. Yeah, come and listen in. It's like a silly good time.
Amazing. So well, good. We love you so much. And guys, don't forget to rate, subscribe, and comment. We are
Women on Top Official
on Instagram.
I really needed this today.
Yes. And Women on Top Podcast on Facebook and Women on Top Official on TikTok too.
Yes, so. I am. And I'm Tam Sursok.
And I am Roxy Manning.
And you are
Lindsay Shaw.
And we are all women.
Women
on top.